Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Senator Gillibrand and I just think it's better to start with, here's a very strong regulatory framework that we're putting out. We're happy to adjust it according to changes the House might want to make, changes the White House might want to make, changes the industry might want to make, but starting with a very firm, solid regulatory framework seemed to be a good place to just lay the product on the table for comment, and we'll begin considering comment immediately.
Will we get any crypto legislation before the next election? Well, Senator Cynthia Lummis and Kirsten Gillibrand are pushing forward with a new stablecoin bill that hopes to get the ball rolling on stablecoin legislation in the United States. The bill aims to create definitions for who can issue a dollar-pegged digital asset and how they can go about doing that. It also calls on both federal and state regulators to oversee the entities issuing these types of digital currencies. What are the chances of this getting passed, and how restrictive are the terms? We have the right person to unpack this bill joining us right now. Senator Cynthia Lummis, welcome to First Mover.
Thanks, Jen. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you here again. And I have to say, every time we talk, we are talking about legislation. We're talking about bills that have gotten some movement, but then maybe have been put on pause. And now we're talking about a brand new stablecoin bill. Tell me about what the difference is here when we compare it to the bill that Congressman McHenry and Congressman Waters have discussed with Senator Brown.
Well, we're waiting to see what the McHenry-Waters bill looks like. And so Senator Gillibrand and I decided to put our work product out while we're still waiting, so the industry could see it and comment on it and react to it. So the House and the White House could see it and react to it. We're hoping that that will expedite the completion of their work so we can marry the two bills and then move forward in 2024.
What kind of reaction have you received so far?
No, I think people are happy to see a bill that they can read, can comment on, are now interested in seeing what the next steps are. So we're glad we went ahead and put it out just to get some good feedback, both from the other chamber, also from the White House, and from our colleagues in the Senate. Most importantly, from the industry, who is going to be in a position to use these pieces of legislation.
I've read some of the reactions from folks in the industry on Twitter. Some are thinking that it's a little bit restrictive when they look at the operational and reserve requirements. What's your response to that?
Well, we decided to put out one-on-one reserves. So this is not like a bank where they have fractional reserves. This is recognition and response to the Terra Luna and other matters that have caused concern within the Congress. We think if it's one-on-one hard assets, whether it's U.S. dollars or U.S. treasuries or a combination of assets that are recognized by the United States, that's a good way to start. We also, in the Senate bill, do not allow algorithmic stable coins. We'll see what the House bill looks like when their work product is ready. So I can see why the industry would look at this and say, wow, that's really restrictive. We kind of wanted to start there because we think that some of the things that have prevented the Congress from being comfortable and ready to move forward with digital assets is examples of colossal failures that have occurred over the years. Instead of creating an atmosphere where the Congress says, wow, we need to regulate this to prevent some of these things from happening again, the reaction seems to be these assets are dangerous. They're not ready for prime time. They're being used for illicit purposes. I don't understand the use case, so I don't want to touch it. And so I think we, Senator Gillibrand and I just think it's better to start with, here's a very strong regulatory framework that we're putting out. We're happy to adjust it according to changes the House might want to make, changes the White House might want to make, changes the industry might want to make, but starting with a very firm, solid regulatory framework seemed to be a good place to just lay the product on the table for comment, and we'll begin considering comment immediately.
Okay, so then I guess that's good news to hear, I think, from an industry perspective. Have you engaged with stablecoin issuers, or did you engage with stablecoin issuers as you were coming up for the terms for this bill?
You know, we talked to them, and then we added a few tweaks that industry provided. Because we really wanted to get this on the table and give all of the potential issuers of stablecoin in the United States to react, just filing something and giving them something to react to seemed to be a better course of action.
Can you tell me which issuers you spoke to?
You know, it was just a variety that, for example, Coinbase would have been one that we got some feedback from. They might have given us feedback before they ever saw the bill. There were others as well, mostly done by my staff and Senator Gillibrand's staff.
You mentioned that in the bill that entered Congress yesterday, there is a ban on algorithmic stablecoins. What led you to create that restriction?
Well, it was the Terra Luna episode. I think there were about $50 billion that basically disappeared when Terra Luna failed. That was an algorithmic stable coin. So the safer strategy, once again, acknowledging that our colleagues in Congress who you know, haven't studied this, don't know the difference between a stable coin and a cryptocurrency, don't understand the use cases, hear a lot about illicit use of digital assets, but they don't know how to separate the ability to regulate those illicit uses out of existence and how to properly regulate. You know, they are looking to, I think, Senator Gillibrand and I to come up with ideas for them to consider that we can use as bases to educate and inform the Congress. But, you know, if they can't see a work product, they don't even know what we're talking about. Now, at least they've got a bill they can read. They can see that we pulled in the FDIC statutes on conservatorships and receiverships. So if there is an insolvency in a U.S. regulated company, there's a process for winding it down. So we want them to know we've really considered safeguards, and we've taken a very conservative approach to this asset.
Does it worry you that with so much education that's needed in Congress, that maybe we'll see some momentum like we have in the past, and then we won't really see this bill move forward? We won't see any legislation be put in place because so many people don't really understand the difference between stablecoins and other cryptocurrencies, or really understand the ins and outs, the intricacies of what these assets are and what they can do?
Yeah, that's a constant concern, Jan. And we try to educate our colleagues who will listen. I try to find books that I found that I could relate to that help explain the use case and the manner in which there are processes available to deter illicit finance. In the case of this bill, if a company is doing more than just a stablecoin business, they're going to have to structurally cordon off their stablecoin business from their other activities and have a separate custodian, because these are going to be assets of not the stablecoin company, but of the individuals who are using stablecoin. So we're trying to protect the consumer and then be able to point to these examples in the bill as ways that address some of the concerns we continue to hear on Capitol Hill.
What does this mean for issuers like Circle or PayPal? What would they have to do to comply with the proposed bill?
Well, there are different levels and avenues of compliance that break out depending on whether you're a $10 billion company and lower or $10 billion and higher. So presumably PayPal, we're talking 10 and higher. So they're talking, they would be focused on either the state or the Fed or the OCC. If it's a lower than 10 billion, it would be the Fed or the states. So there's a recognition that just the inherent risks to the larger providers, that the risk provided to the system, the banking system, is higher, and so they need a little bit higher level of scrutiny and protection.
Are you thinking there could be a grandfather clause or something similar that would allow companies like Circle to continue operating as they are now? Or if this bill was passed, would a company like Circle, and I say Circle because it is one that the industry is very familiar with, could be banned unless it secured a federal charter?
Well, if they're, they'd probably have to get a federal charter, to be honest. But we want them to look at this bill and understand what the, given their existing product, how do they think that their compliance with the Lummis-Gillibrand bill would either change their current model or provide them with hoops they feel that are unnecessary for them to jump through. So we're very focused on companies that are located and embedded in the U.S. economy. One of our goals is to make sure that the U.S. dollar remains the currency of choice as the on-ramp and on-ramp to and among digital currencies. And so it's very important to us that we have this business robust and resident in the United States. We have clear compliance and regulatory mechanisms, so it's not murky and ill understood. We don't want these companies going to Europe or other places because they find that there it's a friendlier environment regulatorily or otherwise. But we also want to ensure that these are consumer protection oriented regulations so we can have a really robust industry in the U.S.
That's in the U.S. Now, if we look outside of the U.S., does the bill ban or limit stablecoin issuers based outside of the U.S. like Tether? Again, I bring up Tether because that is another prominent stablecoin issuer when we talk about the industry. Is there a mechanism in the bill that would ban issuers who are based outside the U.S. from accessing American customers?
Well, this is very much oriented towards a U.S. regulated company. And so Tether, if it chooses to remain offshore, is happier with a different regulator. That's a business choice for them. But if they want so the U.S. Good Housekeeping stamp of approval on their product, and we hope they will, that they'll come into compliance in the U.S., we would certainly expect Circle to. So let's say you're a U.S. consumer. You don't know much about Circle or Tether or a bale of hay, but you want something that is blessed by a U.S. regulatory mechanism that was designed to protect consumers. Now, if that were me, I would choose Circle over Tether or the bale of hay. And that's what we think is going to be the advantage of compliance with a U.S. regulatory framework that's well understood, well structured, had industry input, protects consumers, and has an ability, if there is an insolvency, to unwind in a well understood process. So that's why this bill is, you know, this thick instead of this thick, because we're very much trying to contemplate a regulatory framework that I just described.
I giggled there because I imagined you in the bale of hay and your cows, and it was just like a lovely image to imagine.
I describe it. But I compare everything to a bale of hay, everything.
I got to ask you, though, if an issuer is based outside of the United States but have American users of that stable coin, is there some overlap that you've considered? Would they fall under the regulatory eyes of American regulators if they had U.S. customers?
I can't really answer that question. It would be a little bit like if you are a customer of say a European foreign exchange company, you're basically saying, I'm willing to submit to the EU's regulatory framework, whatever that is. Or I am comfortable using Tether, even though they're offshore. Now, that wouldn't be my preference. I mean, one of the reasons I never would have touched FTX with a 10-foot pole is it wasn't based in the U.S. I mean, that should be a flashing red light for anybody who's not sophisticated about financial assets in the digital space. And so I would think if you're super sophisticated, you think an offshore company is rock solid, be a knowledgeable investor. But if you just want the comfort level of knowing that the United States is regulating, monitoring, requiring segregation from the assets of the company that's the issuer, that custody is well framed, that there's they're one-to-one hard asset backed. I mean, those are consumer protections. So if I'm a consumer, I'm going to, and say Circle comes under this regulatory regime, of course I'm going to want to do business with Circle or some other company that falls under this regime. So it's not that we're going to cut customers off. We're just saying, hey, buyer, beware. You might be dealing with some company that is playing fast and loose, and that's why they have not onshored their business.
You know, I ask that because there are frustrations in the industry. We've seen regulators like the SEC go after companies who are not American-based, but they do have ties and tethers to the American economy through customers or employees. And so there has been kind of a blurred line there, but it sounds like what you're saying is that's not the way you're thinking about it. If the company is based outside of the United States, they're regulated by a totally different entity, but they shouldn't expect U.S. regulators to go after them if they violate the terms of this bill.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but we also want to know what Gary Gensler and the SEC thinks of our stablecoin bill. That's why we want it laying out there for everybody to see, the regulators, the policymakers, the users, the issuers. This is a new industry to a lot of us. And so we want a lot of eyes on this product before it becomes law.
Thank you very much for joining the show. It was wonderful seeing you again.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Jen. Thank you.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.